Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective is presented by YouTube TV. Try it free today at youtube.com/NBA23. New users only. Terms apply. Cancel anytime. Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Sunday evening. Joining us from New York City is Tim Bontemps.
Hello, everybody.
Joining us from Denver, and we've been needling him, Bontemps, about not being with the series. Now I'm home.
Oh,
he's in Denver. So
first time for everything.
I'll be catching up with you tomorrow. It's Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Hey, don't feel bad. I made a pit stop at home last night.
I'm sure you did. He doesn't fly. He doesn't do anything before the double-digit hours, I've learned during this finals. You want to do something with him at 9:30 in the morning, he's not showing
Listen,
up.
Listen, The important people have their own schedule.
I said I once got demoted from a job because I told one of the bosses I don't operate before double digits. I'm not trying to get demoted from ESPN, so don't put it out there, Wendy.
All right. Joining us from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, his new home, brand new head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers, Nick Nurse. Hello, Mr. Nurse.
Hello, everybody. Great to see you. Thanks for having me on.
We don't recognize you without the initials on the forehead.
Tradition. No, I was out there getting a little sunshine today and sporting my new do. I don't know.
Oh, wow. Do you and Wendy use the same product? It looks good.
It's a do. It's the only do without a hat. It's the now you know why I wear a hat.
Listen, a few years ago, we had you on the podcast. Then you won the championship. A year later, we had Michael Malone on the finals podcast. And, you know, he's on the verge of winning the championship. Maybe a year or so from now, we'll have Michael Malone back or have another coach back and you'll be We're talking about Nick Nurse trying to get one more win for the 76ers.
I like how Brian is taking credit for your title here, Nick. That's good work on his part.
It's all part of the long-range plan of getting back to the title. Thanks, the Reverend. The Rev.
I think Nick would say every time he's a first-year head coach with a new team, he wins a championship.
That's right.
That's the trend that he's trying to continue here.
I will say this. We've heard some of your stories over the years about coaching overseas and coaching in the G League. You've won championships all over, like at every level. But it had to be nice, you know, you become a coaching free agent and like a whole bunch of teams wanted to talk to you. Like that must be, considering that, what you had to go through to get your first NBA job, the fact that you had so many teams interested in you this time around, that can't be too bad.
No, that was interesting. It didn't kind of look that way when I became a free agent. It looked like there was, and then all of a sudden it seemed like about after every loss, there was another job open. Right. It was interesting. It was quite the experience there for 5 or 6 days. Seemed like I was in a city talking to somebody not in the city of the team. It seemed like I was in Detroit talking to Phoenix and in Miami talking to Philly. And then, it was strange kind of trying to figure it all out, but very happy with where it landed. I'm got some history with Daryl. I think the ownership here is amazing. Obviously good team. I've wrestled with these guys a lot over the last couple of years. So do know the team pretty well. So super excited to be here. Yeah.
What? I can only imagine what that call with Joel was like when, when you were getting the job.
Well, you know what? It was good. It was, I've had a couple, kind of maybe two or three kind of longish, I would say, meetings with him and, that whole thing, I didn't really realize how much we were going at it in the heat of the moment, but I happened to catch a few while I was in Philly on this, sports news. And I was like, man, now I know what everybody's talking about. They were very spirited, but never like, he was making valid points and I was trying to make my own valid points, back and forth with each other. And then as that went on through the years, it just kind of turned into he'd come out at the jump ball and he'd look over and glare at me and I'd glare at him and we'd both kind of smile and get ready to go at it again, So he's an interesting guy. Good dude. Yeah.
What was that process like for you? Like you said, you were obviously bouncing around from meeting to meeting. It's almost sort of like a college recruitment tour, felt like in some ways, going from kind of one thing to the next. What was that like? Because obviously you're going into these meetings and you're talking about, you know, specific things with each of these organizations and kind of analyzing them all. Like, you know, sort of what was going through your mind as you were trying to bounce from, you know, one team to another for, you know, over the course of 4 or 5 days and analyze the different jobs and talking to different people and figuring out what you might want to do?
Yeah, I would imagine it would be like, you know, the other way around when the teams are interviewing a whole bunch of people and they get a kind of, it's very informative. It was very informative to listen to, you know, their side of the story, or them ask me how I saw their side of the story, and bounce a lot of things off. And, you know, and you don't really know a lot of these people. Obviously, some of them I was meeting for the first time, or you meet them and talk to them a little bit. And then all of a sudden you're spending some pretty intense, long hours with them, you know, talking about things. But mostly it was just interesting and informative. Yeah.
So aside from you agreeing with Embiid that he doesn't get nearly enough calls now, what are the type of things that you guys are talking about? Like, do you come in there with points of emphasis of things that you know, want to work with him, you know, maybe wrinkles to the offense? Does he come in the same way? What do those discussions look like?
Yeah, I mean, I think is a very good team, and I don't know where you guys kind of saw them this year, but I saw them as a team with a chance. Mm-hmm. You know, they're with a chance, right? And I felt that way as well. So I don't think this is not a transformational type job where you're like got a change. You know, I think they're very, very close, and you already kind of said it. It's probably wrinkles and tweaks and got to dig into it a little more before I figure out what some of that stuff is. But I think a lot of it's just going to be, a vision of trying to get where everybody wants to go, and then a plan that aligns with that vision.
You've got a busy summer, man, because so you're coaching, you're integrating with your new team. I know it's typical for a coach to have meetings face to face or on the phone with new players. You've got to assemble a staff. And then you're coaching the Canadian national team this summer in the World Cup. And you guys are.
There's free agency as well.
Free agency. I think there might be free agent in Philly. I don't remember.
Draft, summer league, free agency.
Yeah.
It's a year, Rev, just like you, man. It's 12 months a year, man.
As we hear all the time.
You guys got an absolutely brutal draw. Brutal draw in the World Cup. But you're a live team, man. You guys got a shot at this sucker. Your U16 team toe-to-toe all the way to the championship today. And you got a busy summer, Nick.
Yeah, I sure do. We're
good question.
We're working pretty hard. We're working pretty
open ended.
You know, yeah. I mean, listen, you're right. I'm trying to just prioritize it. Obviously, the short term things, like you mentioned, I'm just about finished up seeing all the players face to face here for the Sixers. Should have that done by the end of this week. Hiring staff simultaneously. We're getting closer on that, and then obviously we'll be here for draft, putting a summer league team together, and we'll just kind of take it step by step. And as far as Canada goes, you know, we've had a lot of consistency, we got a lot of the staff working together that we stayed together through this whole last 3-year run, and those guys are doing great as far as organizing things and getting us ready to go. And Rowan Barrett and Michael Bartlett at Team Canada are ready and fired up.
Jamal Murray and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Now that's a backcourt.
So that's not bad.
I don't know if Jamal's going to play this summer, but I'll bet he's going to play next summer. And if you can get qualified for those Olympics, and look out. That's a good backcourt.
there's some good guys. I think there's some great commitment. I think you're right. Jamal's going, you know, he's going about as far as he can go this year, it looks like. So it should be a short turnaround for him, but we'll see. He's always been very committed, you know, and it's not been easy for him, obviously, with some of the injuries and stuff. But Shai's super committed, you know. Lou Dort, Dwight Powell, Kelly Olynyk, Big Zach is in the mix. And we're looking forward to seeing, I think, Zach.
Yeah, Zach Edey. People don't realize Zach Edey, National College Player of the Year.
Yeah. And a lot of other guys that I didn't talk about, too. So there's a team there. Yeah.
You obviously were, speaking of Canada, as Tim said earlier, you took over the Raptors 2018, led them to the title. And as we all know, the Raptors had a bunch of times they'd fallen short in the playoffs. And part of, I think, you taking that job was kind of, and obviously Kawhi helped with this, was sort of resetting the mindset of where the franchise could go in the postseason. Obviously, we all know that Philly has gotten to the second round, including that epic series against you guys, including this year against Boston, had a bunch of close calls in the second round to keep bumping up against the ceiling of getting out of the second round. You talked about this a little bit when you got introduced, but is part of your job to try to reframe that and have that become something for you guys to attack as a group instead of it sort of being something that's hanging over your heads, especially in a city where everybody's ready to get negative about something?
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's reality, right? There's two things you look at it. It's reality. It's the truth. It's where we are, it's what's happened and it's where we are, but I see each season as kind of its own entity, and what's happened in the last whatever how many years as will have no bearing in my mind. And that's my message going forward. And that's two things. You got to acknowledge it. Like, we're going to get judged on whether how we play in the playoffs, right? I don't think 45, 55, 65 is going to matter that much. It's going to be, how far you go in the playoffs. So I think you acknowledge that as a fact, and you be mindful of that. And that means, you kind of got your short-term goals, but there is a plan to get through the entire season and be ready to be really good at the playoff time.
So
your press conference was pretty, I think for the Philly fans are coming in, they're ready to fire off, not fans, but the Philly media was coming in, they're ready to fire from the hip. And you were like, no, I'm going to do your job for you. I'm going to come out and say exactly what you're trying to get me to say. You came with your game face on that press conference.
Well, it was, you guys have talked to me enough. I'm going to try to tell you what I see is the way I see it, and if I don't quite answer it one way, I guess you can go ahead and answer it and ask me another way, or, try to get to the answer, that we're all happy with in the end. Yeah.
That reminds me when Rick Carlisle once asked me, how many ways do I want to ask him the same question? And my reply was one, you have an answer, which was true. I just kept asking the same question. He answered it with his eyes, and I moved on to the next subject.
So Nick, back in 2019, when you brought the title home to Toronto, you guys were up 3-1 coming home. Now the circumstances of that finals were a little different, and that Kevin Durant was coming back from injury. So there was this belief that the Warriors might have a rally within them. So it's not exactly apples to apples, but the situation that the Nuggets are in here, 3-1, they have been an extremely impressive team down the stretch here. They have won 9 out of 10 games ever since the Suns, the series that they had in the second round, the 2-2, they've won 9 out of 10. Miami has lost 6 of 8. It's actually kind of hard to get to the finals and lose 6-8, but they did it.
they lost four straight home games, which seems impossible to do as a finals team, but they've
pulled it off. They played the Boston Celtics. We know that it's very possible.
Right, which is one of the reasons why I think they've won 4 of the last 5 road games in the playoffs. So you've kind of been in this situation before, and then Durant ended up getting hurt, and you lost that game. Before coming back and winning in game six, where you guys went 3-0 to close Oracle Arena. Unstoppable force that the Warriors were at Oracle. They lost their last 3 games there to you guys. But anyway, so we saw Michael Malone today and the Nuggets players with their mindset of, we're not actually up 3-1. We're down 3-1, which, is not true. But you've actually got a unique perspective on this, because the ball was in the same court for you guys a couple years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about that today, that you obviously playing very good. You think you got a lot of the game plan right where you want it. Boy, winning at home, you're starting to think, man, won't this be awesome if we can close this thing out in our own city And, you know, I think we were up six with about 3 minutes to go in that game. Amazing timeout for a little rest and regroup, turn the tide the other direction. I think they hit three straight threes and ended up, you know, taking that one from us at home. But I think, yeah, I mean, it's, you feel like you're thinking, let's do it now. We don't want to go back there, you know, all those things. Cause if you do go back, then all of a sudden, you know, yeah, you're battling a road game. I don't know. I don't think the series is over. I know Denver's been great. I think Miami will give them everything they want tomorrow. I think that closeout game is super hard and, you know, even no matter what it looks like as it's going down there, it can change in the last few minutes and you can sneak out of there and go keep the series alive. I think it'll be a good game.
Well, and you guys were a similar team in the sense that, you know, Denver has obviously never won a title. You guys had never won a title. It was the first time in the finals. And, you know, I remember seeing you that weekend and there was sort of this weight of expectations of finally getting over the hill and finally winning a title and doing that in a city. What is sort of going, and obviously you guys ended up doing in game six, but like just as you're coming down the final couple games of that, knowing sort of what it means in the market you're in, sort of like kind of what are those final couple of days like as you're trying to stay focused on what you have to do, but also knowing sort of what's at stake and what it means to the city to get over the line and get that done.
I think Coach Malone said it the other day, or maybe it was yesterday. He said something about don't turn on your TV. Don't read the, you know, don't get on the internet. Don't let everybody tell you how great you are. I remember saying those exact, I mean, I was doing everything humanly possible not to see anything that was being written. You know, the only times you ever get, you know, somebody will text you, you know, like one of your friends will text you an article or something, you'll see the headline and you're like, stop texting me that stuff. I'm trying to stay away. But anyway, I think he said that. And I think that's the right thing to do. It's hard. I think, you know, to kind of keep your hardness about you. If a million people are patting you on the back all the time, telling you how great you are and you're letting that sink in, that's the first battle to keep in mind. But you're right. I think there's some similarities where we kind of felt good because we were getting performances, you know, one night it'd be Serge have a big night, you know, then Fred would have a big night. And then, you know, then Danny Green would throw some in and that, you know, just like, it just kind of felt like we didn't really know where stuff was going to come from, but we felt like we had so many chances of getting it from, you know, four, five, six different guys. And I think that's probably what Denver feels like right now. They have so many people not chipping in, but playing great at certain nights. You know, it's more than chipping in. It's like they're delivering big time, but it's moving around a little bit. You know what I mean?
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's the roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Yeah, obviously the face of the Nuggets franchise, Joker, has been here for years. And, you know, they've been able to build around him and get pieces that fit really well with him. Whereas you guys were unique in the sense that there was a very good team that wasn't good enough to get over the hump. And then they make this huge trade to bring in Kawhi, who I don't know if you can say a guy who was there 1 year was the face of the franchise, but obviously he's the superstar. He's the guy that everything revolves around. What was that dynamic like to say, okay, hey, we made this huge trade, you know, to try to put us over the hump to have a championship team, and kind of knowing the whole time this might be a one and done type of situation?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair assessment. I think that even in some of my first meetings with Kawhi, it was kind of like, you know, we're gonna go for it this year, and I don't know what's gonna happen after that. And I was like, that's cool, let's go for it this year, you know, like let's go for it right away. And I think he certainly, like, just like Joker does, I mean, he certainly has a elevation effect to other people, just a confidence and a swagger that kind of permeates to others. But yeah, I mean, it didn't seem like we were just trying to do the best we could. You know, it didn't seem like it was, oh my God, we know we only got one chance and we got it. You know, we weren't in that. We were just like, let's look at the next game. Let's put a great game plan together. Let's try to adjust the way we think we need to. And let's really go play hard and play defense and let that carry us when things get rocky, you know.
Was there a point where you went from hoping that that could be a championship team to believing that you had a championship team?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, immediately when the trade was made, I was like, okay, this is like a legit chance now. I mean, right away, but you didn't know where Kawhi was. He hadn't played forever, right? So you didn't really know if that was even going to be a thing maybe either. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty early on, right? Like, I don't remember exactly, but I think we might have went out like 13-2, and I was like, this is a really good team. This team's got a chance, like a really good chance. And but you know, I think thinking back even further, we got beat Orlando game one of round one, and
game one curse.
Yeah, we had a little talk after that game, and the way we played in game two, I don't know what we ended up winning that by, but I think it was in the 30s or something, 35 or I don't know what it, but it was a defensive performance that I hadn't seen before. And I was like, okay, now, like I told them after the game, I said, okay, if we're going to play like this, we can go as far as you guys want to go. And they just kind of kept building from there.
I think when you were an assistant in Toronto, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, you guys played against the Heat in the playoffs. I think that's true.
2016. First round.
2016. Yeah, anyway, what I'm asking, what I'm trying to get to is what it's like to go up against
second round. Seven gamer in the second round.
Second round, yep. Seven gamer, right. Dwayne Wade, yep.
What it's like to go up against Eric Spoelstra from a coaching standpoint in the playoffs. Because I'm talking, you know, on the side to some of these Nuggets coaches, and they're just like, this is a bear, man. I mean, you know, they're doing great. They're in great shape. They're 3-1, but this is a bear.
Yeah, listen, I think it's a bear every time, regular season, playoffs or whatever. Like we got a little kind of under the radar rivalry that like when our two teams line it up, man, like both squads just, I mean, they just get after it. I mean, and they know we, you know, so it's like, I don't know, like, you know, I can just remember things like, I don't know, we're going to start the game full court man-to-man press. You know, we're going to start pressing before they do, or we're going to go zone before they do, or, you know, like it's an aggressive mindset that you better come with and be, you know, like you better be ready for that and understand that. And we talk about it all the time when we're getting ready to play them. Super fun, super competitive. And, you know, he's a great coach, obviously, and he's going to do some things, you know, that are going to disrupt you, and you got to be ready for them. But it's really fun to prepare for them and get ready to play them for sure.
That dynamic, the coaching staffs during a playoff series, you know, each game ends, you kind of look down, you kind of give them a little wave and then you turn your back and like, all right, let's go kick their ass. You know, like you know, it's the interplay between the staffs. It always is that way. But just, you know, you guys go back into your bunker and cook up what you cook up. I mean, it's always interesting to watch, I think.
Well, the hard part is you gotta, you know, as soon as one's done, you start trying to think, okay, now what are they, you know, what are they going to do now? And you just got to throw everything out there and see what makes sense. And, you do a lot of, you know, praying that you get some, hopefully get some ideas that'll come to you, you know, that you think, oh yeah, that's, they're going to switch this matchup and put him on him. And then they do it. And you're like, oh, thank goodness that idea came from somewhere, you know, or whatever. But, you know, it's like you do the best you can, but mostly it's when the ball goes up that you got to start seeing what they're actually doing and then what you're ready to do to combat it. And hopefully you've talked about that a little bit.
By the time you get to game five, though, is there a lot of stuff that's really left to go back and forth on at that point? Or if by the time you're four or five games in, is it largely played out in terms of back and forth? And at that point, is it more who's going to execute their stuff better at that point?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of like I've heard you say a lot. I mean, a lot of it's going to come down to are we going to make, you know, if we're creating good shots.
Yeah,
that's one thing. But at some point in a game four or five, you got to make them, right? Like if you know the creation's one thing, and you can say, oh, we're getting good ones, they'll eventually go in. But you're at the stage now where you got to not only create them, you better start knocking them down. But it's, you know, back to the first part of your question. I would say yes, but I think that, I mean, who knows, like at this point, you know, you get to a stage of like, you know, like we can't stop this thing they're doing anyway. So why don't we do something really wild here? And, you know, what do we got to lose?
Just try yeah, something. Yeah.
So I could see something, you know, that we haven't seen tomorrow or something, you know, a little bit outside the box tomorrow. Yeah.
You know, you mentioned, you know, Jamal Murray from Team Canada. And he's a guy who, it's crazy. He's never been an all-star, but I think he's been so good in the playoffs, not just this year, obviously the bubble as well, that to me, he's earned superstar status. What about him makes him unique in terms of kind of his mentality and his approach?
Well, I think you just kind of rate him A+ in a lot of areas. Like he competes, like he's not afraid to just, you know, really compete. He's not afraid to take like almost any shot, you know, like, you know, that he's going to keep firing and he's going to keep creating space and he's going to bump you hard and get away from you and create, you know, and that kind of thing. And again, I'd rate him like A+ on attitude, you know, just character, all these things, that toughness, all these things that you may not think that are going on out there. It's all about just winning or all-star appearances or whatever, but this guy's A+ worker, teammate, you know, like there's so many things that you could throw, characteristics you could throw under him. And it's great for him to kind of, for, you know, I think it's great for everyone to see him back it up with like these monster numbers and possibly a title.
So when you have a guy like Jokic, I'm not sure there's anybody in the league quite like him. And especially
ever
when you don't have.
Yes. Another bold statement.
Thank you. That's what I'm here for. It'd be one thing if you have a giant center to lean up against them like Joel Embiid, but they don't. And so what Spoelstra has done, what the Heat have done in this series, is they've made this series kind of about defending Murray. Like the Heat are throwing everything at him. The Nuggets are coming back. I totally understand the strategy. Like this is a series where this is a guy who's so incredibly talented that you really have a hard time slowing him down. I don't remember seeing that too often, even when you had LeBron or, you know, Steph, you had certain things that you would do to try to directly impact them. This is a finals. And then correct me if you think I'm wrong, Nick, where the force that he plays with and the intelligence he plays with and what he does is so amazing that you can't even really go at him. That's the way the Heat have played this series.
Yeah, it makes it tough. I would say that I'm going to say something a little bit off the thing that really like gets discouraging, even when I'm watching here, is when he comes down the lane and he veers one way off to the right side of the rim and they always go in. Like you finally think you've made it, move it over here, and he's it's going way right, and somehow
it's like there's a magnet like in the ball.
I was just gonna say
like
that
soul crushing, like you think, oh, that's way off, and then it bounces, and somehow it funnels in. He actually missed a couple last game, but until then he throw it way right one time, way to the left side of the rim, way long, and then it nestles in, and that's like That's unbelievable. I don't know how he does that. And I've never seen that in my life. Like so many shots that look off target that somehow find their way in the bottom of the net.
Some people from Philly might remember a Kawhi shot doing that.
Yeah, it was a little short. It was a little short.
It wasn't too short.
But hey, you know, that's it. That's, I said that in the press conference too. You know, they're like, well, you know, the bounce of the ball sometimes really, really impacts a game and all that stuff. But you know, just going back, there's just so much. I think the other part is he gets a lot of offensive rebound. He doesn't jump and somehow like move space and sticks that big arm up there and pulls them down. And those are discouraging too, because you're too small or too, you know, you just moves everybody over and stands there and you got to somehow figure out how to come flying in from somewhere else. He'll get some, a lot of extra, but then he usually will dump those off to somebody else for a layup or something or an open three. He just does a lot of, you know, those are spiritual plays. You know, they hurt the spirit of the other team a lot, you know, and they help boost his teams, you know? So there you go.
When you were interviewing with Daryl, did you guys discuss like lobbying points for Embiid's MVP campaign, or is, now that he's got one, is that no longer a priority for the franchise?
We did not discuss that at all. Thank you. Good question.
I was going to say, did he bring out any like officials analysis of officiating from like 2017? Because I know he keeps those in a special folder. It's always at the ready.
He doesn't have it on a folder. He's got everything on his laptop. Whatever you just ask a question, couple clicks later, there's your answer. Yeah.
Right.
A lot of info.
Well, one thing you probably did talk about though was James Harden. And I know you said at your presser that the best argument for him to stay is that if he wants to win, it's a good place for him to be, because it's that you think you guys have a chance.
Yeah.
I was curious, without saying too much, if you've been able to meet with him yet and what your conversation with him have been like, and assuming he is back with you guys, you know, obviously that Embiid Harden pick and roll has been about as good a play as there's been in the league. We're talking a lot about Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic. Mm-hmm. Those guys have been about as good as you can do in the pick and roll the last couple of years. Where do you see the combination of those two guys and with them Tyrese Maxey in terms of ways you can further augment what they've been able to do on the court if you can get James back this summer?
Yeah. I did meet with him. Really good talk. I mean, you guys obviously know him and have talked to him quite a bit. He's an intelligent player, man. He's an intelligent player. He sees a lot in the game. And just, you know, when we talk about things, he kind of same thing, almost like, you know, he says, how'd you see it? How do you see our team? And what'd you think of the playoffs? And, you know, just kind of start talking basketball. And he's very enjoyable to talk basketball with. Like I said, very, very smart and had a lot of experience, a lot of success. And I would say, you know, the same thing. I mean, it is a deadly, you know, inside-outside combination. It is a deadly pick-and-roll combination. And just what other things can we do what other areas of the offensive side can we do to polish that? Make them even more efficient, not in those kind of actions, but maybe other actions, you know? And then, you know, what's the best thing we can do defensively to max those guys out?
Yeah. Harden is, I thought he had a pretty excellent year this year. If you take the standard as when he was the MVP, okay, maybe it wasn't the same, but he's older now and he's in his mid 30s. And he single-handedly won high level playoff games by himself. He didn't have the greatest finish that series, but you know, he's got a lot going for him still. He's a highly coveted player in that regard. And, I know I'm sure that he's watched you and your team's coach as well. It's a two-way street to a certain extent. I mean, he's seen what you've done. Your guards have been pretty good in Toronto.
Yeah. I mean, I think I didn't answer the rest of Tim's question there too. And I think we've already talked about this too. I would say there isn't a whole lot of guys that can do the performance, some of those performances that he did in the playoffs, right? But you can't, nobody, you know, Steph had one, Tatum had one, James had a couple, you know, like there's nobody's doing that every night, nor should they, or should they be expected to. And going back to Tim, you know, yeah, like Maxey's got to take a level up. He's got to play in some of those other games when those guys aren't firing or the game plan has changed or whatever to take those guys out a little more. Tobias, PJ Tucker will be back. I mean, there's guys there around there that can help. Melton, you know, those guys got to do what some of these Nugget guys are doing. You know, have some big time performances in some of the playoff games as well.
And you mentioned you had a relationship with Daryl Morey, you know, as you were coming into the NBA, you were the head coach of the Rockets G League franchise. How much interaction was there with you and Daryl? And, you know, were you involved at all with the Rockets as far as like any kind of offseason or training camp? Was there any kind of relationship with Harden at that point with you?
There wasn't then with Harden, but with Daryl, there was obviously I was down in the Rio Grande Valley coaching. But when that season would end, we'd have a lot of this time of year, we'd have a lot of long days watching film, getting ready for draft picks and talking basketball. You know, is a lot of good learning nights for me late into the night, you know, with those guys just talking about players and talking about, you know, hoops in general. So yeah, we spent quite a bit of time together in those days, 2012, 2013, I believe, something like that.
That was get up and go. Like you guys played in Rio Grande Valley the way the Rockets played too, like high speed, right? That's what you believed in.
Yeah, that was kind of, you know, back in some of the what would you say, experimental stages of that. You know,
you were the laboratory, right?
Yeah. And that's part of the reason I took the job. Daryl was like, it's a laboratory down there. We're going to do, he's like, here's what we think will win. Can you like find an offense that gets these kind of shots and things like that? And, you know, we'll try to, you know, play around with it and stuff. So yeah, it was good. Part of the reason I took the job, because I thought it'd be a huge learning coaching experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're an experimental coach in the NBA too. You do some stuff that other teams don't do. You're not afraid. I mean, it was one thing when you played box and one in the finals. I mean, that itself was, but you'll triangle and two, you'll do some crazy stuff out there. You know, I think that's one of the things you become known for. I don't know if you want to be known for, but that's certainly one of the things you become known for in your career.
Well, most of that stuff just comes out of necessity. Like a lot of times you say, well, we can't guard a man to man. Like we're trying to guard a man to man, it ain't working. So what's it look like? You know? And they say, well, you know, if Steph ever gets out there on his own, let's just make sure he doesn't shoot, you know, 'cause he's killing us. Like, you know, so let's do some of that stuff. And you know, that, yeah. And it's just all like, you look out there and you say, this might be the best tactic to use, and you throw it out there. And if it doesn't, you know, you go to the press conference and say, I screwed it up. I had to talk with James about that. We ran the one time we had this diamond in one we ran against Harden one time. He'd come off of like, I don't want to exaggerate though, but it seemed like he had a bunch of 50-point games in a row. Yeah. I don't know how many years ago that was.
I remember the game you're talking about.
But that didn't even bother me. He'd shot something like from 22 to 27 free throws like five games in a row. And I just said,
This was when Daryl dubbed it the unguardable tour and had like t-shirts printed.
This is it.
So Daryl loves to print t-shirts. Yeah. It's one of his favorite things to do.
I said, listen, we're not going to go to the game tonight and I'll sit over here and watch this guy shoot 25 free throws. It's not going to be that. We're not going to do anything but that. So we decided to pick him up man to man. And we had another guy kind of high at the top of the key. And as soon as he crossed half court, we doubled and like immediately doubled and just made him do something else. And we lost the game. So it didn't really.
But how many did he have?
Garner much attention. He, you know what? He didn't have hardly any. I can't remember exactly, but he was down in the 4-5-6 range till 6 minutes to go or something. Then he threw in a couple deep threes somehow, and he still made them. Like, he finally got a couple of, but he made it. Just blows me away how he has a shot of three all game, and then he finally gets open and he drains it anyway, you know, two in a row, and you're like.
Yeah, James has perfected that. Shoot the three and then fall on your butt on the way down. He has no intention of actually landing on his feet. He's going to land on his butt on the way down. And
I hope they protect the shooters next year. They got to protect. Got to protect the shooters.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Absolutely.
You got a couple foul shooting machines now. You've talked about it a couple times, but you're obviously in Toronto for a decade. I mean, people listening to the pod might not know this, but you were an assistant for 5 years under Dwayne Casey, and then you were the coach for 5 years. So, just what has it been like having to move again and do all this stuff again, which, I mean, you know, as Brian alluded to, and people who listen to the pod know, you've had quite the tour around the world. It's not like this is your first time changing jobs, but it's certainly been a while since you've had to go through this process. I imagine, especially now with kids and stuff, it's been interesting.
Yeah. It was 10 great years there, man. Doesn't, you know, how many NBA coaches and assistant coaches text me and said, I've never been any place more than 3 or 2 or 4, or, you know, all these guys. So it was an amazing run. Just kind of feel really super energized right now. It just kind of was time. I think it was time to go to a new team in a new city. And I'm super energized by it.
Did any part of you during your search for a new job consider going west just to kind of, yes, be able to avoid bond temps on a regular basis?
No, not because of that, but just to think that maybe it would be a fresher look. Yeah, there was some thought to that going west. This is going right down the street here and in your own division and all that stuff is that's what I told Masai when I got the job. I said, I was trying to get further away. this is where I ended up, man. We're going to see a lot of each other.
They got out of paying your contract. Yeah. So I'm sure Masai was happy that you got another job. He probably knew though, you were going to get another job, but it was big day for today for Canadian sports. Are you aware of what happened today?
No.
Taylor, the golfer, won the Canadian Open.
Oh, nice.
By making Wendy
wants to talk golf.
That's the first time a Canadian's won it in a while, right?
Nick, you should look it up on YouTube when we're done here, or Twitter. He made a 70-foot putt for eagle on the fourth playoff hole.
No way.
And crowd, you know, the crowd went crazy, as you can imagine.
Talk about the PGA.
And Adam Hadwin, who's another Canadian pro, came running out with a giant champagne to spray him, and security didn't recognize him. Just pile drives him into the 18th. Oh, no, but it made me think. Remember that night in Toronto? You guys lost game five. Remember Lowry had a shot from the corner. I thought he was going to make it, and it got tipped. Yeah. I think Clay tipped it. Pouring down rain. Nick, our producers had decided to move the crew outside. It was pouring down rain in Maple Leaf Square, and it was going to be this iconic moment. There was 40,000 people in the street, and it was pouring down rain. But still, that was an all-time day in Canada. Your parade will always be remembered. One of the great days in
Canada. I like you're tying the Raptors winning the championship to the RBC Canadian Open, which
I am, quite frankly, sir.
Yeah, I got a Canadian Open story for you. Can
please
I
give it
in here? Yeah. So I was a guest in the pro am at the Canadian Open, and you know, it's a big deal. You know, you go out there, and there's people in this. You know, I play golf. You know, I'm just out there like any hack. But now I'm teeing up. There's a crowd there, you know, in the stands, and, you know, ladies and gentlemen, Nick Nurse, you know, and I put my ball down and absolutely pump one straight out of bounds on hole one, and like no claps, like they don't know what to do, like dead silence. And so I tee it up and hit it down there. We got a few claps out of that one. I choked in my Canadian Pro-Am Open debut. I pumped one straight out of bounds on number one.
Gentlemen, I'm talking to a Canadian icon. I'm not, you guys think I'm joking. The man is a Canadian icon.
I was laughing at you comparing the Raptors championship to the Canadian Open. That's what I was laughing about.
In fact, I was comparing it. Wendy's great days in Canadian history.
I know Wendy. Wendy's trying to get a spot in the next Canadian Open Pro-Am. That's what this is all about.
Nick, I don't have the guts to do that. I can't believe you had the guts to even – who are you playing with? Do you remember?
Yeah, that's what I'm curious about. Who are you in the Pro-Am?
Yeah, I was playing with all the RBC CEO and former CEO and all the vice president. They were all all the sponsors. All right.
You weren't with a pro though? Aren't you guys paired with a pro for that?
I don't think so for that one.
See, he was, this is my point. He was the draw. He was the draw. It was come watch Nick Nurse play golf.
Yeah, till that first shot.
Yeah.
All right, Nick, thank you so much for giving us time tonight. I know you're in the process of moving your whole life, getting yourself ready for a huge summer. So I will see you in Manila. I hope. I'll see you in Manila.
You'll be there?
I'll be there.
Yeah, I think he was implying that the Canadians might not make it to Manila, which is really just a great way to have our guests on the way out. Maybe you'll get knocked out before you get to the
Canadians.
The
Canadians have a brutal draw. It's not a commentary on the Canadians. You're playing the French in the first game.
Yep.
And I will tell you that, you know, a few weeks ago when I was at the Victor Wembanyama lottery, it was all smiles in there, as you can imagine. But Vincent Collet, the French national team coach, I said, about your draw. And then his smile went away into a frown.
Yeah, he's got to take on the Canadians.
Yeah, there's
no
five
judgment. Teams. No judgment. If you make it to Manila, it will have been a terrific accomplishment. But you start in Jakarta, I believe. Mm-hmm. So today, Philadelphia. July, Las Vegas. August, Jakarta.
Awesome. Thank you. What a blessing to be able to do all that stuff, man.
Basketball is
seriously
great. I'm not going to cry like Doris Burke.
It's a long way from the British Basketball League, huh?
I was going to say, you don't have to drive the bus in any of those spots.
And a long way from Carroll, Iowa. Yep.
That's certainly true, that's too.
Right. Yep.
All right. Thank you, Nick.
Thanks, guys. Awesome.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. Okay, thanks to Nick Nurse. Now it's time for trivia. And trivia on the Hoop Collective is presented by YouTube TV. Try it for free today at youtube.com/NBA23. New users only. Terms apply. Cancel anytime, Tim Bon Temps.
And now to present today's trivia question, the whiz of the quiz, Tim Bon Temps.
So we're a little premature with this, but Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, with one more win, will go down as one of the high scoring duos in a championship postseason of all time. They are currently averaging 56.8 points per game between the two of them.
A lot.
They will be among the top five all time. Who are the duos, the other four duos that are in the top five?
Okay, Steph, so KD. Now, point of order. This is average. This is not total points, right?
Average scoring. Steph and KD is in 2017. It would be third all time behind Jokic and Murray.
Okay.
Shaq and Kobe in 2001 is first.
Okay, so we've got.
There's two more.
LeBron Jordan. And Kyrie.
No, not LeBron.
Jordan
Pippen in 93 is fifth.
Okay, so we've got three.
There's one left.
All right, one left. Kareem Worthy.
Nope.
I was just a guess. Can you?
Is it before we were born or is it after?
Nope.
We were born?
Nope. Nope. Nope.
He said before or after. It can't be nope to both.
No, he said before. I'm sorry. He said before. I was saying no. It's not some sort of trick question.
Huh, Bob Pettit and somebody?
It's not Bob Pettit and somebody.
Okay, I'm just scrolling.
I'll give you one more guess.
He's just looking
LeBron and D. Wade.
LeBron was in the answer, but it's not D. Wade and it's not Kyrie. So that should tell you who
LeBron
it is.
And AD.
LeBron and AD. They were fourth.
All right.
Okay.
So Shaq and Kobe combined average 59.8, and then Steph and KD was 56.6. LeBron and AD was 55.3, and Jordan and Scottie are 55.2. And as of now, Jokic and Murray would be second all time, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
The Nuggets are playing awesome right now. I don't know if anybody noticed.
It's funny. The series is sort of a repeat of the conference finals where the Lakers didn't play badly. The Nuggets just were better. And Miami hasn't been amazing in this series, but they haven't been awful. But Denver's just been better.
Well, we went into this saying we did not think that the Heat had enough offensive firepower to be able to beat the Nuggets in series. That has certainly played out. These games have been particularly low scoring because the Heat have succeeded in making the Nuggets play in the mud. But the Nuggets make the mud look pretty. I mean, and Aaron Gordon, like Joker, by his ridiculously high standards, was pretty mediocre in game four, right?
8 for 19. Yeah.
Like 23-12, 4 assists. That's like a very pedestrian Joker performance. But Aaron Gordon just was bullying guys. And look, when Gordon hits three threes, like, boy, those are the shots you're hoping he takes.
Look, good they luck won a game.
Then he's just bullying guys and then cutting and catching lobs. And like they could just beat you in so many different ways. And they are, I think, about to go 16-4 in the playoffs. And I don't want to hear anything about, well, 7 seed, 8 seed. No, this has been one of the most dominant championship runs. I think that they're about to finish off that we've seen.
Well, look, they won a game where their two stars went 13 for 36 in game four. Right.
Yeah.
And to your point about the run.
And Jokic was in foul trouble and he tweaked his ankle. It didn't look like it slowed him down, but it might have.
No, that was the everything was there for Miami to win that game and make this series 2-2. And Jamal Murray and Aaron Gordon closed the door in the fourth quarter with Nikola Jokic sitting on the bench.
And Bruce Brown.
And Bruce
Brown had 11 of his 21.
Yep.
And for Murray, who is a, you know, you think of Jamal Murray. He's really, I mean, he's a point guard, but you think he's really kind of a two guard because Joker's their point center. You think of him as a scorer. For him to have a 12.0 assist performance when the Heat basically said, we're going to do everything we can to get the ball out of his hands. And he basically says, fine, I'm going to distribute. My guys are going to light you on fire. And he's the first guy to have 4 straight 10-plus assist performances in a single finals since frickin' Magic Johnson. This is a guy who's known as a scorer. It's been pretty amazing.
Yeah, I think the Heat, obviously, they're, you know, it's not that they're not throwing everything they can. I think the Heat's game plan worked. And they still got beat. And
make somebody other than Murray and Joker beat us. And guess what? Aaron Gordon beat him and Bruce Brown beat him.
So what was happening was when they, you know, I'm no Zach Lowe when it comes to X's and O's, but when they would run the dribble handoff, which is what the play that killed the Heat in game three, they doubled Murray very, very aggressively so that Murray really couldn't do anything. And so he would pass the ball to Jokic, or sometimes Jokic wouldn't even give him the ball. And he would just look to see where the double team came from. And he would just throw it to that guy. And it wasn't
and
just him.
Got some wide open threes out of it.
Yeah.
Gordon's such a great cutter. Gordon got a bunch of buckets off of cuts.
Yeah. He cut the back door to the, for the lob that one play.
And to your point, Brian, the games have been low scoring because Miami, as Tim has said, succeeded in having these games be played at a slow pace because they can't win the games at a high pace because they can't keep up. But you know what? Yeah. Denver still got a 118 rate offensive rating for the series because they're getting whatever they want, even though Miami is playing well. And to your point, Tim, about Denver's run, again, assuming they win and get, you know, get this 16-4 record. I think it's fair to say they haven't had the most difficult run of opposition over historically compared to champions in the past. The difference, though, is that they have demolished the competition along the way. Like, yeah. That's why, to me, it's such an impressive run. Like, yeah, there might not be an all-time iconic series here that Denver's had in this run, but Denver has throttled everybody they've played. And by the end of the series they've played, they've just taken the will out of their opponents. And that's why, despite, you know, whatever you want to point to, seeding-wise or record-wise or whatever, that, to me, is what's made this run really impressive, is the way they've gone about taking care of their opposition.
Right. I'm certainly not trying to hear any kind of nitpicking about, well, they played an 8, a 4, a 7, an right. 8. Because guess what? That 4 seed, when the Suns traded for Kevin Durant, pretty much the consensus, certainly Vegas, and I would say the vast majority of, you know, media folks and whatnot, had the Suns as the distinctive favorite in the West at that point.
Yep.
They spanked the Suns in 6, right? The Suns needed to get 2 historically prolific and efficient performances from Devin Booker to get 2 games in that series. The Lakers, dude, you know, LeBron and AD, like that's a duo to be reckoned with. And guess what? There was an NBA Today show where an entire panel picked the Lakers, not before the series. They picked the 12th place Lakers at the time, maybe even 13th place. If there's a series of the Nuggets, who would win?
Yep.
All the hands went up for the Lakers. So I'm not trying to hear any criticism about quality of opponent.
Yep.
To me, the question is that if you want to what if this, the what if is, hey, if Jamal Murray was healthy the last 2 years, would the Nuggets have already won a championship? And then the what if that we will find out is this the start of, you know, a multi-championship run for the Nuggets? Because you look at this core, Joker just starting his prime, Murray just starting his prime, Gordon in his prime, Michael Porter Jr. hadn't even hit his prime, KCP, you know, nice piece. They'll almost certainly lose Bruce Brown this summer, which will sting, but, you know, they made that deal with Oklahoma City to get some extra picks. Christian Brown, they think, is ready for a bigger role. They like this Peyton Watson kid. The Nuggets are going to be a force to be reckoned with for a while, not just in the West, but, you know, in the league as a whole.
Yeah, one of the things I saw, I think it was Jamal Murray today. I wasn't at the media, but I was reading the quotes. I think it was Jamal Murray, but he said that Tim Connelly was still reaching out to him and supporting him. Tim Connelly, I mean, Calvin Booth, as you mentioned, McMahon, has done a great job building out the fringe of the roster.
Yep.
The trade for KCP and the signing of Bruce Brown for the taxpayer mid-level is just a terrific signing. Tim Connelly built this team brilliantly. And, you know, part of it was put in position, by the way, they picked up an extra first round pick in last year's draft. They made a draft night trade. I can't even remember how the trade went, but I think they traded for Peyton Watson on draft night. And now they've made another move to pick up, I think, 3 extra picks in the next 2 drafts. I think they had.
Yeah, they got a second this. They got a second year this year, a first next year, and then another second for a lightly protected future pick from Oklahoma City the other day.
They might have also changed the protection on 2027 pick that they owe Oklahoma City. We haven't heard that aspect of that yet, so we'll see. The balance of the trade indicates that they might have given us something else.
Yeah,
it would make Oklahoma sense. City.
But hey, for a team that's in their position, it's smart to get assets over the next couple of years that they can use to, you know, buttress out this roster. Cause like you said, Tim, they're a team that you look over the next 5 years, we do these future power rankings once or twice a year and we look at them. I mean, Denver's all their guys are in their prime. They've got young guys coming behind them and they've got some salary decisions to make, but the core guys are there and locked in and, you know, there's no reason to think they're not going to be right here for a while.
When if you ask people about Calvin Booth, one of the things that you hear is this guy loves scouting. loves scouting, loves, you know, looking at like, the, you know, I think they've got, what is it, the 40th pick. If it was 41, it'd be a future two-time MVP, but I think they've got the 40th pick in this.
Well, they just got the 30, they just traded for, I think, the 35th, the 37th pick too.
Yeah, so they're, you know, they probably feel like, hey, you know, we've got a pretty good chance to get, if not an immediate contributor, somebody who, you know, sooner than later might be able to.
Well, not only that, I'm not sure that Calvin Booth was in Miami. I didn't see him there. And I think somebody told me he wasn't there for all the time because I think he was preparing for the draft.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's like,
it's part of the job. That's what you got to do. You're doing it right.
Yeah. I suspect he'll be there on Monday night.
I would recommend that.
Yeah. I think that's a good idea.
So, it'll be the highlight of his career. It'll go over the game winner he hit in Utah to beat Karl Malone and John Stockton and deliver the first playoff series victory of the Dirk Nowitzki era in Dallas.
I have no recollection that. Of that. I wonder if he remembers it.
Oh, well, trust me, he remembers it.
I'm sure he does
remember it well. That's in Dallas. Calvin Booth obviously is now known as the general manager of the soon-to-be, I believe, champion Denver Nuggets, but in Dallas, he'll always be known for the shot that he hit. It was the Mavericks' first playoff series win in a long, long time, because as you recall, they were awful before the arrival of Dirk.
I will say this. We've said it repeatedly, and I'll say it one more time just to get it on the record before we wrap up. But if the Heat hit threes, anything's possible.
Oh, look. So. We said going into game four, they needed two things, right? They needed to shut down Jamal Murray and hit threes. And I know Jamal made a bunch of nice plays to get off the ball. Obviously, 12 assists and no turnovers is great. He still shot 5-for-17. Jokic still shot 8-for-19. They lost the game because they hit 25% of their threes. Like, now, again, we're talking about having to walk a really thin line here. But if we know anything about the Heat, they're not going to roll over in game five.
No,
like, they might not. They might not win, and I think we all agree we expect Denver to win, but Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo and Kyle Lowry and these guys and Eric Spoelstra, then they're going to be coming for Bear in the game. And Denver's
there will
Denver's
be haymakers gonna, thrown. No
that's question. Right. Denver's going to have to win the game, but, you know, that's been the thing about this series. Well, yeah, and that's been the thing about this series from the beginning. In the earlier rounds, Miami was playing teams where they had multiple outs, right? They could play really well, and the team they were playing could shoot themselves in the foot. And Denver is just not going to do that.
Well, there's a couple. I know, you know, the Joker, a notorious stat patter. There's two very critical statistical developments to
wait.
To
I know one of them. Here. What's the second one?
What's the first one?
The first one's I saw you tweet about the triple double. He needs 14 assists to get back to a triple double average. So what's the second one?
He is now averaging 9.8 assists per game. He needs, if they close it out in game five, he needs 14 assists to get to average that triple double. The second one.
That's for the series, right? Or is that for the playoffs?
No, that's for the entire playoff run. The series, he's averaging like 8 assists per game because he had a couple of 4 assist games in the finals.
Yeah.
That's for the entire playoffs, which. Nobody has ever averaged a triple double and won a triple double for an entire playoffs and won a championship. I mean, this is virgin snow
that insane
touched here. And then the other one is
it's more like you want to see like a virgin track where the track's just been plowed. That's what Jokic is so excited about, a horse track. He doesn't care about skiing.
I was trying to make like a Colorado Denver reference, but okay, fine.
You could do some other Colorado references, you know.
What's his other stat? I want to know this other stat.
The other one, this one, Andy Bailey from Bleacher Report pointed out, he has a 1-point edge on Jimmy Butler for the overall playoff scoring leader. 572 to 571 during these playoffs. As of now, Joker is leading the playoffs, all players. Points, rebounds, and assists. I mean, you want to talk about one of the most ridiculously dominant playoff runs in NBA history. That's what we are watching this dude try to put the finishing touches on tomorrow night.
Okay, it goes back to what we talked about going into the playoffs, where I thought he had as much pressure on him as anybody in the league because all the excuses were gone. The team was healthy. They had the best record. West was down this year. Like, can Denver get over the line? this year. And I think Jokic has answered every question and then some. I think that's putting it mildly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think someone asked.
We always said, like, hey, three-time MVP, that's putting you in the company of Larry Bird and Wilt.
Yep.
I'm not saying he's, like, a top five player all time, but I'm saying he's got a chance to become one.
Well, look, there's 12 guys who have won two MVPs and a title.
That's a good list.
And I think that might be, like, 11. Because Karl Malone won two MVP. Karl Malone didn't win a title.
Do you have the list of the 12?
I had it. I don't have it right in front of me. I think if two MVPs, a title, and a Finals MVP, I think it might be 11. And there's one guy.
I know there's seven guys. I know there's seven guys that have won two Finals MVPs and two MVPs. Because I looked that up going into the
Well, you're knocking some playoffs. Guys out of there. For like Steph has not won two Finals MVPs.
Right.
But anyway, the point is he's going to do something that less than 15 guys have ever done if he wins a championship. It's a pretty, you know, just using
I'm looking at the list now of multiple time. So multiple time MVPs who've won a title: Kareem, Bill Russell, Michael Jordan, Wilt, LeBron, Moses Malone, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Bob Pettit, Tim Duncan, ooh, Steph, and Giannis. It's a pretty good list.
Not bad. Yeah, I don't know if there was a Finals MVP for, like, when Bob Pettit won. Was there Pettit, a Finals?
I mean, even if you want to take
Bill Russell,
even if you want to take those three guys, even whether you include those three guys on the list or not, you're talking about an inner circle Hall of Fame list.
Right. Right. Exactly. So I mean, just you don't even have to argue. Like, you can just use that framework. You're talking about an elite company. And as Bontemps said, if he adds another one and then, you know, adds a Finals MVP, now you're talking uber elite, which, I mean, he's got a shot. I'm not going to rule anything out with him. So that's what's on the table. The Nuggets have been around for 47 years. Joined the NBA.
And we're in the ABA and didn't win a title there either.
Yeah. 47 years since they joined the NBA. I think they came in 68. So that would be like 53. No, 50 something.
55.
55. So they've been around for 55 years.
Coming in with the math. How about that?
By the way, I think they made the ABA finals once, but they never won in the ABA.
I believe Larry Brown coached them in the final ABA finals against the Nets.
Larry Brown, man. Wearing some overalls probably.
Yeah, it's a very iconic photo of him in some overalls coaching that series.
Yeah. So the point
is either of you guys ever owned a pair of overalls?
I have.
Not to my knowledge. He's a
my, fa- my he farm days. Farm. That's right.
Middle school. The thing was, you'd wear them like one strap down back in my middle school days. But go on.
I didn't be on your skateboard with your backwards hat too.
That was more of like a, you know, hip hop wannabe type thing. But go on.
McMahon, this might be striking the heart of your MO of Texan, but have you ever worn cowboy boots?
I have. I was gifted a pair of cowboy boots because of the persona that you guys have bestowed upon me in this draft. So I have a pair of cowboy boots that I've worn a handful of times.
Okay.
I've never rode a horse, though. I did get kicked by one as a young chap, though. But
everything is explained. All this time, on attempts, we never understood it. We got it. Finally.
It all makes sense.
All right, McMahon, we're so sorry. Everything we've said, we got it now. I'm so sorry.
It was a glancing blow.
55 years, I'm sure.
Probably hurt the horse more than him.
55 years that the Nuggets have been in existence, building towards an opportunity to win a championship on their home floor. It's very special. We get bogged down in the analysis. We get bogged down in the criticism. That's what we're supposed to do in what we do. But it is a moment that has been budding for a long time. And just with this group, forget about the guys in the 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. With this group, you know, basically it started when they hired Michael Malone and drafted Jokic 8 years ago. It's been an 8-year run. They missed the playoffs, I think, at one point. I missed playoffs the first 3 years of Malone's tenure.
Yeah.
The last year being when they lost the last day of the regular season
to Jimmy Butler.
Overtime game.
The year before, that's when the home crowd applauded when they got eliminated from playoff contention because Russ hit the 35-footer to cap off the
I mean, it's
record-setting triple double and 50-point right. performance in that crazy comeback.
Right.
So these are the kind of games we all do the job for. See teams come through a lot of stuff right. and get to moments like this. It's really neat. Tonight will be fun.
It's a truly organic championship, and it's like sort of a reminder that no matter where you are in the NBA, no matter what your team is doing, you know, small market, whatever, they're kind of proof that it can be done. You know,
well, and you heard Will Hardy when we had him talk about how massively hopeful this is for other small market franchises around the league right now. That this is a
I don't really feel like Denver is that small of a market. It's a pretty big city.
I mean, but it's not. It's not. Denver will never.
It's not a glamour market.
Premier. Yeah, it's not a glamour market. Yeah, you know what I'm saying. It's not like somewhere that's ever going to be
right.
You know, in the
I think Denver is a bigger market than Miami.
Yeah, but Miami's a glamour market, right? Miami's a non-free agency destination. This is a organically grown. Their stars are drafted and developed. You know, the other key players are traded. Well,
now it's going to be 3-3 going back to Denver for game 7, the way this last 20 minutes has gone. We should end here.
All right, and that's what we'll do. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. Thank you to our guest, special guest, Nick Nurse. Thank you to Bontemps and McMahon. I will say, I have lined up a guest for a pre-game 6 podcast. Is that a jinx? I don't know.
No jinx.
All right. McMahon.
Adios, amigos.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/hoop, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/hoop now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/hoop.